You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to Humanitarian Radio. I am JD Beauclair.
And I'm your co-host, Tony St. Tone.
Well, we've had a really exciting week. We've spent several days up in Mount Shasta. We'll talk more about that actually on our next show. Was quite the adventure, and definitely recommend anybody to go take a peek and see what's going on up in Weed, California. Also wanted to talk about, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the month of October. It's a great fundraising time. And we also have a great guest on today. His name is Mr. Rob Mann. Rob is a writer-director, and he has a movie coming out called The Pumpkin Carver. Now, that sounds like a really creepy movie, but when you hear what he says it's about, it's actually, it will change your mind.
Yeah, another thing about Rob that I wanted to add in is that Rob just got done shooting our video for Cranky Pants. And he's definitely a very creative person to be with. We all got together down at the playground as far as the band was concerned, and he had some really interesting shots, and I can't wait for you guys to all see it. So that is coming up, but again, we've known Rob now for the past year and a half because we actually did some shows with Rob, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this on the air also, but Rob's also a comedian, so yeah. I'm part of a duo called Piper and Tupper.
Very funny. We were their backing band on some of their comedy shows in Burbank, and that was quite the blast, I must say.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about that with Rob, so I don't want to give too much away.
So I want to get back to the breast cancer awareness thing. I had two things actually happened to me that made me want to just mention both of them, because if they make anybody think just for one second, I think that it's a good thing. The first one is we were getting ready to go to a red carpet about a week ago. And this young lady had her cell phone tucked in her bra. See it all the time. Wouldn't think it was a big deal, would you? Well, I saw on Dr. Oz, and then I later looked into it and found out that CBS and NBC and the American Medical Association, a whole bunch of people are right on board with this thought. Every one out of four women under the age of 25 is currently getting breast cancer from having their cell phone up against their breast tucked in their bra. Isn't that a shocker?
Yeah, that's crazy.
One out of four. So anyway, I saw this girl and I had just seen it, and she, you know, was doing her nails next to me, and I said, hey, did you happen to catch the Dr. Oz show that was talking about cell phones and how they've determined scientifically now that something about the operation of a cell phone is actually causing cellular damage in women's breasts, and actually in men in their back pockets. It's like all over the place having it on your body. And so she said she hadn't heard about it, and I told her that they were saying the chances are one out of four for girls under 25. Well, she whipped that phone out of there so fast and said, thank you so much for telling me that. I had no idea. I'm going to tell all my friends, because we all wear them that way. So I'm very happy to be able to just spread that little tidbit. Another thing that I want to say is a girlfriend of mine, Donna Lee Roden from Sarasota, Florida. Hi, Donna. Donna was reminded that it was Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so she scheduled her mammogram, and thank God she did, because they did find a tumor that they do feel could be cancerous, and Donna has a young daughter, so she's very grateful that she actually went to look into something. She said that her comment on Facebook was, don't think that it's your body changing just because you're getting older when you see little marks on yourself. Pay attention to it.
Now, are most women afraid to go because they don't know what they're going to find, so that's why they don't schedule one?
Oh, I would say that's a good part of it, and it's not exactly a fun adventure. It's a bit painful, depending on how you're built, and
right. It's
not a joyous thing, but you know, neither is dying, so I gotta say, right. when those are your two odds, I think I'd go for the non-joyous versus the non-life.
Gotcha.
A lot of people do the Walking for Breast Cancer fundraisers in the month of October, and they time them with holiday and fall festivals and things of that nature. Walking for Breast Cancer was one of our guests early in on our show last year. And definitely look them up if you're looking for someone to contribute to. They're part of the Susan G. Komen Foundation as well. And that concludes my breast cancer awareness conversation.
There you go. So we're going to take a very short break, and we're going to come right back with director, actor, comedian.
Crazy
Robert,
man.
Robert Mann. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you have a great idea for a product and you don't know how to get it made? Call Artistic Journey. They'll help you find your way to getting your new products made and into the marketplace. Need a free consultation? No problem. Need artwork and graphics? No problem. Need your idea turned into something wonderful that the whole world can use? Call Janie at Artistic Journey to help you get through this process. It's not as hard as you think. With 20 years of experience, Artistic Journey can pave the way for your product to get into the hands of people around the world. Call Artistic Journey today, 941-780-2538.
So listen up. If you're on the market for a graphic designer, you know, someone who can create logos, websites, etc., along with radio ads and video, well, there's no need to look any further than ST Productions. It's your one-stop shop for all your graphic, audio, and video needs. ST Productions will get it done while saving you money and having fun. So keep them in mind, ST Productions, an audio, video, graphic design service.
And we are back, and we are so delighted to have with us today Mr. Robert Mann. Robert is the man of many talents, as we were talking about earlier in the show. Rob, say hi to our friends around here.
Hi, friends around there.
Perfect.
How are you doing?
Very good.
So, Rob, I was talking earlier about a variety of different things that we've done with you, and I'm going to let Tony lead into how he first met you. And take it from there. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Rob, it's really been interesting because I met you through a Craigslist ad, and that's like wide open when you say that. But actually, I was answering an ad because you and your partner, and I know just to let our audience knows is that you go by Piper and Tupper as a comedy duo, and Piper and Tupper are two guys that are sort of like, I would say, stuck in the 60s. Is that accurate?
Kind of accurate. You know, they were born at Woodstock, and so that whole 60s vibe is infused in them.
Yeah.
And, that's for a lack of better description. They're kind of stuck in that world of peace and love.
Yep, and you guys were looking for a band.
Which isn't a bad world to be stuck into, right?
No. It's a really cool world to be stuck in, and you guys were looking for a band to help put together some type of show, and... So I entered your ad. We started performing at Flappers on Saturday nights, and we had a blast doing that, and that's how we got to know each other. And then we got to know you more and realize that you're actually a director also and an actor. And then from there, you know, we moved into
filmography.
Film, and you guys helping us with our Rise Up show. You came and videotaped quite a bit of that show for us. So if anybody has seen our Rise Up live performance, Rob is the man who's on stage grabbing every crazy angle on stage that night, which was awesome. So,
well done, my friend.
Thank you for those shots.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Yes, that is true, how we met. It was wonderful. And, you know, you take a crapshoot when you throw out these ads in Craigslist, but I think, you know, with you guys, we hit the gold. So it was wonderful, and we loved having you on the show and created the show to where, as you know, in that situation, was a very unique situation, a comedy club having a backup band for a couple of 60 kind of guru comedians. So it was way out there, but I thought we had a lot of fun. And if you remember, some of the times we would be out by the street, and we'd be like flagging them down, telling them, come on in, you know, and shouting at them, don't cross the street on the red light.
Exactly. It was a very unique situation because you didn't just have, like, you weren't just in a comedy club. You were actually in the patio section. And so you had to deal with the bus going by.
Hecklers.
You had to deal with, like, just people in general walking by. And you're going, you know, being a comedian's got to be one of the hardest jobs out there. And then you add to it traffic and stoplights, and you're going, really? Oh my God, okay, let's see if we can pull this off. But you guys rose to the challenge, and I thought that was what was so exciting about it. It's like you took what was
around you and used it to your advantage. And I think that's what was so cool about it.
It's called survival, Tony.
Well, you did it well. You did it really well, you know, taking those elements around you that most people get frazzled and go, I've got nothing. I can't deliver my punchline when the bus is going by, you know, and it's louder than me.
I'll tell you a funny little story we did at the Comedy Store many years ago. But Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees was in the audience.
Wow, okay.
We knew he was going to be in the audience. And we said, we don't want to embarrass him. Say, hey, ladies and gentlemen, right here, Mickey Dolenz in the audience. We didn't want to do that. So we thought we'd do something a little bit more unique. And there was a moment in our act at that time we would be taking requests. And we would do Last Train to Clarksville. And we would do the song. We'd start again. Take the last train to Clarksville. I'll meet you at the station. You can leave here by. And we'd stop. And we wouldn't know what the time was. And so we did that. And we said to each other, listen, when we get to that point, I'm going to scream out, hey, Mickey, what time did the train leave? And see what he says. If he, replies at all. So we get to that point, you take the last 10 o'clock, so I'll meet you at the station, we'll meet here by, and we're arguing at 2:30, 4:57. Mickey, what time did that train leave? And immediately, right on cue, he goes, 4:30. Thank you, we can leave here by 4:30. And we just kept on going.
Awesome. Now, did people recognize that he was in the audience?
I have no idea. He was in the back. We knew he was in the back in the dark. But we just blurted it out. And he responded, right in time.
Favorably.
That's awesome that he actually just played along with it instead of like, I'm not going to get involved. That's very cool.
Oh, yeah, because remember, in a way, our act is kind of mocking the 60s on some level.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I mean, it's taking that peace and love thing and it's taking it to the 10th power. Overly doing the peace and love, and for those guys, as musicians, all those people, it was very serious for all of them. So it was nice that he played them along, and we all had fun, and that was that.
No, I think that's so cool. And just so people know, how long have you been doing the comedy thing? Because I want to get into the producing thing, I want to get into the acting thing. But since we're talking about your comedy, how long have you been doing stand up, and have you always done it as a duo?
No, I haven't always done it as a duo. What happened was, I started doing stand-up when I was in college, and my father had a nightclub, and he had a talent show kind of thing. And I remember, I was really, really young, and I was like 17 or something, but I got into the bar, because obviously he owned the club, and I would do all these impressions. And one of the impressions I did was of Jerry Lewis. Young Jerry Lewis.
No, don't. Lady.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, where's Dean? No, Dean. Come here, please. Don't have me. So I'm doing annoying young Jerry Lewis. And I'm just going off. And there's this lady, a fat lady in the front row. And she turns and she screams and she goes, I can't stand it anymore. And she goes, please get off the stage. I can't stand it anymore.
Oh my God. Wow. And you're like,
yeah.
That's awesome, lady. Thanks. Did you know my dad owns the place?
That was your dad's nightclub. Awesome. I bet he was thrilled.
My dad's nightclub. And so, of course, when somebody says that to you, what do? You just keep going more.
Oh, yeah. You go even harder.
You just turn Jerry up.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. I would turn it up to like 11 at that point.
Yeah, it was 11. It goes to 11. But yeah, I started kind of doing that, and then once I got out of college, came to LA as a serious actor, and the partner, Mr. Piper, otherwise known as Michael, he and I put together a little theater piece called In by Eight, Out by Nine. And it was exactly that. It was a bunch of different vignettes. You'd come in at 8 o'clock, and the show ended at 9. And we invited all industry people. They had wine, cheese. We decked them out, and it was by invitation only. And we did it at the the Improv on an off night, on a Monday night when they were dark. And this agent came up to us and she said, hey, you guys work so well together, you should form a comedy team. There's no comedy teams anymore. And so we go, okay, fine. We look at each other and we go, okay, great. And then out of sitting at the home, trying to figure out material, Piper and Tupper were born. And it just came out of nowhere. We were just sitting there, and I had the guitar in my hand. And I was just, you know, fumbling around with it. And we're going, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, let's do this. Let's do this. And I just went, yeah, man, let's just do that. Yeah. And he go, no, seriously, come on, let's get serious. This is what we got to do. And I go, yeah, man, let's just get serious. Right on, let's do that. He go, okay, man, yeah, let's get serious. And it was, that banter started Piper and Tupper, and that's how it came about.
Gotcha. So right off the bat, you were already grabbing that character saying, hey, I'm going to, like, yeah, let's do it. It's like, yeah, that'd be really groovy, man. Do it. You're like, no, seriously, are you doing it? It's like, yeah, man, I'm doing it. Are you going to do it? Yeah, I'm doing it right now. You're like,
yeah.
Oh, so you're already in character. I know we were starting. You're like, yep, I already started.
Yeah, catch up to me now.
Right.
Well, so, I got to say that your act is really memorable, Rob, because we still use one-liners from your show. So you definitely impacted us.
Can I tell you one of the lines that I use?
Absolutely.
1, 2, 3, 4.
I thought you were going to say Goonie Guru.
That's how Rob starts one of his songs. 1, 2, 3, 4. And we just kick into it.
It was fun. It was fun.
The band always knows when I'm counting off that it's like, wait a minute, that sounds familiar.
But yeah, it was fun act, and we did it as you know for a while, and we had two incarnations. We had an early incarnation in the 90s, and when we were auditioning, we auditioned for Mati Shore at the Comedy Store, and she saw us, and immediately after we got off stage, we did I think 3 minutes. We're passing her, and she goes, "Oh, that was wonderful! It was like a breath of fresh air." And then she says, "I want you to be non-paid regulars." Like, we're all excited, going, "Yeah, man, right on! Yeah, we're in." She liked us, and then we turn to each other, and we go, "What is a non-paid regular name?"
She means I want you to come in every Monday on your own time and just entertain my crowd. That's the way we work.
Free.
Basically, what it was, and she had us emceeing of all things, but she'd have us like 5-6 nights a week, and our induction to the Comedy Store was we would emcee and we'd split up the act, we'd, you know, introduce other people, and we'd do a little song or whatever, and after about a month, we became paid regulars. We were like one of the fastest paid regulars, and then
that's awesome. And listen, just the fact that you got into let's just back up for a second. Just the fact that she said she wanted you that often, because let's face it, it's a very tough business. So if you don't have it, they're like, I don't care. You'd have to pay me to have you perform here. That's how bad you are. Instead, she's like, no, come on in, and I like you that much. I want you to do 3 or 4 nights a week. And then build your way up, and let's face it, that's what everyone has to do in this industry. It's work your way up.
400,000 other people standing right behind you, waiting for the same job. So for them to pick you, obviously, you guys really had something, because they know in this town of Hollywood, there's a million people in line trying to get that same gig.
Yeah,
very impressive. Mitzi was different than a lot of the other club people, because at that time, you know, they were all wanting to be the next Jerry Seinfeld and all that, and they're all the suit and ties people, especially over at the Improv. And we actually auditioned at the Improv, and they didn't, you know, Bob Freeman and Mark Lano, they didn't get it. They didn't get the act. But Mitzi at the Comedy Store, if you look at Mitzi's, her stable of comedians, you know, you get a lot of people that weren't regular suit and tie stand-up guys. You know, Jim Carrey, you look at all these people, even, you know, Louis Anderson, Andrew Dice Clay, you know, Pauly Shore at that time. But, you know, you didn't have the regular stand-up guys. Perry Basil would do a completely wacky act. So she saw something different in us, and that's kind of like what, you know, she saw something that was unique, different, and special.
Isn't there a photo out there that I thought I saw of you with with Chris Rock and a bunch of other You just mentioned his name.
There's a photo. What she would do is she would group you when she had her Las Vegas tour. And she would group you with other acts that would compliment your acts and people in your you know, in that kind of genre. So our lineup was, when we went to Vegas, it was Chris Rock, Tommy Davidson, Pauly Shore, Maymay Ali, and us. And, so it was a kind of a fun show. And what you do, you go down to La Jolla, she'd have you do a couple main room spots right before you went the week before. So you'd go through, do the original room, then you'd go and do the main room, which is the big room. Then she'd have you on the weekend, 3-day weekend, go to La Jolla, and you do your act with everybody for four nights in La Jolla. And then the following week was like Monday, Tuesday, you'd just work out a little bit. And then I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, you'd go to Las Vegas and then do, I think it was four or five nights there in Las Vegas.
Wow, that's so cool, man. And see, I didn't realize that you were that heavily into it. Again, we just met probably a year, 2 years ago, so, you know.
You didn't have his history when you answered that ad.
Yeah, I didn't have your history. And that's one of the reasons I love doing this show, is meeting people like you that have stories about how they came up and what they've done in the past. That's what fascinates me. I always love, like, the behind the music, behind the scenes. It's like, how did you get to where you are, and what have you done in the past? So that's really exciting. Now, were you doing acting at the same time and directing, or were you just doing comedy at that time?
We were still doing some. We did a commercial together. We did a few other things. Hold on, my TV just had this blasting thing. I don't know. All right, sorry about that.
What do you have? You have a choir over there rehearsing next door?
The choir, I don't know what it was. But anyway, we had two incarnations. We had that part of the 90s that we did, and I was acting, and I was just starting to do screenplay writing at that time, too. My friend George Gallo, who wrote Midnight Run and 29th Street, Wise Guys, Bad Boys, and all that, he was kind of a mentor to me, and he would go over to my sister's house, and he'd be at Jerry's Deli where my sister worked, and he would, you know, be writing things of Midnight Run, scenes of Midnight Run, and I talked to him, and he goes, yeah, when you write something, he goes, let me see it, and I'll let you know what I think. I said, okay, because I said, let me borrow some of your scripts so I can read them. So he did.
He goes, let me borrow all the good parts. And I'll give it back. No, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And to this day, you know, he still reads my scripts. The one that I just did, The Soldier, last year that we shot.
Yeah.
I sent it to him, and you know, the little 16-minute short. And he tells me, after he reads it, he goes, oh, it's really good. It's creepy. It's kind of interesting. It's fun. This and that. He goes, don't fuck it up. Yeah, but anyway, that's what he said.
Classic. You're like, yeah, okay, thanks. Is that good? Yeah, that's a positive reinforcement. I tell you, don't screw it up. Yeah, that's the way I say it. You've been writing, so you started writing screenplays, and you started acting at the same time, and this was all evolving while you're doing your comedy also, yes?
Well, yeah, I started acting, actually, when I was a kid, and my mom was dating a director, and he gave me my first camera, and I started shooting little movies. And so when I was a kid, yeah, I would shoot everything and anything. I have tons of little films of my dogs and cats and people on the street and my dad and my mom and brother, sister, just anything. And then we made a few little horror films, and then that led into college, and I started taking film in college and acting and all of that. So
you were already a little Steven Spielberg, starting off real young, because I know that's how he shot movies of his family. And what type of camera did you have back then? Because I know, obviously, it's gone through the roof as far as what you can do these days.
Oh, yeah.
But what were you shooting on?
I had have and I still have it. It is, it's a little 8mm camera, and you would have to actually wind it up. You'd have to actually, and it was a reel to reel. That was my first one that I got.
Really? So that's like, you know, with the Kennedy assassination, they were like using those.
Exactly.
63.
So, yeah, so this guy, this director guy gave me this old camera to start to use, and so that's what I did.
That's so cool that you still have it. I think that's awesome. You know, I tell people that come over to the house, they see this guitar, and I go, yeah, that's my first guitar that I ever bought. You know, I paid $35 for it from a friend's brother. They're like, really? I'm like, yep, that's the first one I bought. You know, and I've been playing for 30 years, so I've owned a lot of guitars throughout the years, but I still have held on to that one, you know, because it's the first one. It's the one that's like, wow, that's what I got started on, so...
Right, exactly. And then in college, I got, you know, with the video, had a video camera. And,
did you have the big one? The real big, big video camera that had video cassettes?
It had a high eight. High eight, something like that. You put it in the cassette, the eight millimeter, whatever it was. And you put that in, and record it on that.
Okay, so it wasn't a VHS one then, because my brother had a VHS one, and he would record his kids, and it was like, this thing was mammoth. It's huge.
No, I didn't have that. I had a high eight.
Oh, okay. Yep, I know what a high eight is.
I bypassed that one, and I think I just got the high eight. But yeah, started shooting films there, and then just kept going.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the movies that you have done and that you're currently working on. Because I know we had mentioned earlier that you are working on a sequel right now.
I'm working on The Pumpkin Carvers 2.
Yes. So let's talk about that a little.
Okay. In 2006, I shot a film called The Pumpkin Carver. A little horror film. They play it all the time on Sci-Fi, and Minka Kelly's in it. But anyway, that film was made for basically nothing. And it was a real tough shoot. At the end of the day, we sold it to First Look. And it was in all the Blockbusters. They had probably anywhere from 10 to 20 DVDs in every Blockbuster when
wow.
it came out.
That's very cool. I mean, that alone is success, man.
Yeah, it did really well. And so it made First Look a lot of money. It made me nothing because the producers had a horrible contract. And so we haven't seen any of the money. And on the back end, they paid a lot of money up front for the film. But so on the back end deals, they didn't get a whole lot. But
right.
Yeah, so we're doing a follow-up to that after all this time.
When was that released?
That was released in 2006, I believe, 6 or 7.
2007, okay, 6 or 7, and it was called The Pumpkin Carver. Okay.
With a K.
Gotcha, okay. And now, the second one, what is the sequel or the second one? Is it a continuation, or is it a different story? What's going on with the second one?
Yeah, completely different story. What I did was I went back and I wrote a mythology to the pumpkin carver to where you can read it and you can see where carving has discovered. But in the pumpkin carver, as you know, instead of carving pumpkins, the guy, the evil carver, carves people's faces into jack-o'-lanterns. And so that's the serial killer part of it. But so in order to make the next one a little bit more interesting and to give it some backstory, we decided to have me write a mythology. So I went back and I actually looked at where pumpkin carving started. It was in the 1700s, this and that, and they would do it to celebrate Halloween and a good harvest and all these other things. And then people would put on masks and stuff, and it would be a big celebration, basically. But it was really geared towards crops and things like that, and a good year, a good season, and that the summer's over, and et cetera, et cetera. So I had to kind of invent, well, how did it get from, from that to carving people's faces.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
Yeah, when you first told me the name of it before I had looked up the first round, I thought, oh wow, that sounds really creepy. I'm not a scary movie girl. I bite my pillow more than I watch the screen. So for me,
right.
When I asked you about it and what it was about, and you said, well, it had a different message than you would have expected.
Yeah, the second one especially, and even the first one some level, but the second one, it's really about redemption on some level, and not to karma. You know, if you do something evil is going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was writing this one, that was one of the things, because the, you know, my film company, Manatee Films, we try to have do positive messages in our film. So it's very difficult to do a positive message in a horror film. So I had to try to find the angle. And the angle to me was this horrible act happens. A bunch of college fraternity guys rape this high school girl. They drug her, they rape her. And then those are the people that are being attacked and carved up are the people that were responsible for that. But an evil carver that has died has taken over this other body, and that body now is that person, that living person now is doing the killings.
Oh, very cool. So it's so basically, within the film, it's almost like justice is served or karma comes around.
Exactly.
Very cool.
So for the horror fans, they'll still get all their fun things on the screen, and if you look at it a little deeper, then you're going to go, well, you know, hopefully it will deter anyone from doing, you know, some evil things, because the retribution is going to be worse than what was perpetrated.
Right, right. And it's really interesting. I had a question for you. I noticed a lot of directors seem to go into horror films when they first start out. Is there like there's like a whole cult following for horror films, isn't there?
Yeah, horror films. The fans are rabid and they're very loyal and they know what they want and they voice their opinions. And they see all the horror stuff. You know, if you're a horror film fan, you see all of them. And they collect them, and they do this and that. And so it's a good genre to get into when you're an early filmmaker, because it's inexpensive on some level. You don't really need a star. And the fan base is still there. So the horror is what drives you. Sales and the rentals and everything else.
Right, so it's a genre where it's like, hey, you know what, if you put one together, chances are someone's going to want to see it regardless, because it's just, it's a horror film and they see every horror film, right?
Right, exactly. Ours is a niche within a niche, which is very specific. Ours, because it's around Halloween time, ours is has that Halloween niche market.
Yeah.
So that's why sci-fi picks it up, and they've been playing it every Halloween, or every Halloween it pops up again. So that's a good thing for this franchise. That's a really good thing for the investors and people associated with it.
That's very cool. And you know what? I like the fact that you actually did bring some karmic justice to it, so that way you feel like it's not just killing for killing. You're like, no, these guys did some evil shit, so... It's here's some stuff coming back, you know, like there's a reason for it, instead of just like, I'm a psycho killer and I just kill. You know, you have a reason behind it.
Yeah, to me, it's a little too gratuitous the other way. It's just, you know, I just kind of want something a little bit deeper, just so that people can chew on something, you know?
Totally. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You're not just using horror for horror's sake. You're like, yes. I need X amount of blood and I need X amount of killings. You're like, no, I think we could go a little deeper than that. These guys are, some of them are educated, you know, to horror films. So it's like, you know, you don't have to cut the phone line. We've seen that one. So
right. But you know, scene. So the fan who is frothing at the mouth, the rabbit fans, they'll still get their eye candy.
Yes, exactly. Know? So tell us about this other movie that you're working with, and I know that Janie was helping you out put this together or get it out there and get some funding. Tell us about this new movie that you have that you're working on.
This one is called Roberto's Friend, and Roberto's Friend is basically it's a buddy story. It's a family film, and it is about Roberto Clemente, who comes back to life as a 12-year-old boy to help his best friend manage a bunch of foster home juvenile delinquent little league players. And it's sort of like a cross between Bad News Bears and Field of Dreams.
Okay.
So if you took the two movies and combined them, you kind of get the vibe of what this is. Roberto Clemente, as you know, is a big Pittsburgh Pirate baseball player, Hall of Famer. He died tragically in a crash, in, I think it was 1972. And delivering aid to Nicaragua for the earthquake victims. And there was a big earthquake, and he got on a plane on New Year's Eve because he needed to get this aid over to the people. And his plane was actually overloaded, and it crashed, and he died. And just knowing that he's a big humanitarian kind of propelled the story for me. And I don't know how I thought of it or why I thought of it, but I just did it, and it just kind of popped up. And then I just started to develop it, that's all.
That's really cool that you actually took someone like that and to bring him back around, because I think most people know him as a baseball player and not as a humanitarian. But the fact that he died that way trying to do something good for humanity, it is really cool that you actually bring him back to life and you tie him into this modern day situation. I think it's a really cool story, and I can't wait to see the movie. I know that that is being put together as we speak. As far as I'm going to jump back for a quick second, Pumpkin Carver 2, is that in production? Is that coming out soon? Where are you at with that?
Right now, I'm at, well, I want to start shooting some of it, and I probably will start shooting some of it at the end of October, if not for anything, just to get some exteriors of all of the houses that are dressed during Halloween, you know, so I might be using some of that footage into the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, but definitely be shooting some stuff like that. And we want to probably start shooting it in maybe January, February. And right now, I'm working on a rewrite of the script. The treatment's done, and we're securing financing.
Awesome.
And so that's where we're at right now.
Well, it sounds very exciting. It sounds like you have some really cool things coming up. And again, I mentioned it earlier that, you know, you helped us with the Rise Up show as far as filming, and I know that you helped us with the Cranky Pants video, which is coming together really well, by the way, just so that way you know. I am editing it myself, but you gave me a lot to work with. So, and by the way, I can tell that you are a big animal fan because there's a lot of shots of Rocco, the dog, in there. So.
Rocco the Beast.
He's not a beast, Bo.
He is a beast. He's a magnificent beast.
We have him playing keyboards and some tambourine and going down the slide and
some drums.
Yeah, I wanted, but you guys were great. I mean, all you guys were wonderful because you know, you let it down and you just you got very childlike and you guys had a lot of fun. But that's what's going to make that.
That's us normal.
Are you calling us simpletons?
Very childlike. Oh, that's normal behavior.
Neophytes.
Okay.
I like it.
I was acting. That was me acting as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Word.
That's how Jenny said.
So, Rob, one other thing I just want to bring up real quick is you are a fabulous Italian chef as well. And we can't let that go unnoticed because we did have a fabulous Rob Mann made meal of homegrown goodies from your balcony, and was quite delicious. And we are open and ready to receive the next one.
Well, I think we're doing a pizza party together. We already discussed that.
Yes,
we're doing a
with
pizza
Mr.
party.
Mr. Gilman, the other pizza extraordinaire. It'll be
the
competition.
Yeah, the pizza party is going to be great. That'll be a lot of fun.
So, Rob, one last question. So, you're an actor, you're a comedian, you're a director, you're a writer.
You're a chef.
You're a chef.
What's next?
Yeah. What do you like and what would you like to see?
I'm unemployed. You forgot that. I'm unemployed.
Oh, you're unemployed. So, so you have everything going for you. What would you like to see your next step be? Like, you know, like, do you want to keep moving forward in all of these areas, or is there one area that you're really passionate about, saying, you know, I want to direct more, I want to write more?
Like Tony would like a Grammy.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, the comedy and everything else has come out of the fact of loving movies. And I've always been, you know, ever since I got my first camera, love making, you know, stories, telling stories and making films. And everything else is kind of along those lines. I love doing the stand-up comedy, but that's kind of, you know, served its purpose on some level. We did a film on Piper and Tupper, but really the main thing in the future is to focus in on filmmaking and to just get better and better at that and tell better stories and hopefully get some bigger budgets and be able to bring some of these stories to the screen or to, you know, the home entertainment center nowadays. So that's kind of it. I love acting because everything started from acting, but I'm more focused on directing and writing right now. And there's a really neat role in one of my films that I might go, well, maybe I'll cast myself in this one.
Right now
I'm focused in on writing and directing, just trying to, you know, get those films made.
That's awesome. I think it's awesome what you're doing. I want you to keep doing what you're doing.
And Rob, where can people follow you, find you, and see what's going on with you?
They can always go to our website at manateefilms.com, and that's with two N's, M-A-N-N-A-T-E-E, films.com. And I have a Facebook page that is just Robert Mann, and I live in Huntington Beach, so that's the way to find me. But, yeah, on that page, I do a lot of stuff for the film stuff. I rarely put anything personal on it, but most of the stuff there is film, so you can follow me there.
Excellent, Rob. Well, I want to thank you again for taking some time out and telling us and telling our listening audience all about what you're doing and what you have coming up. Be sure to follow him, friend him on Facebook, and look for the Pumpkin Carver 2 and Roberto's Dream coming to theaters.
Roberto's friend.
I said dream. See that? Thank you for the correction. It's Roberto's friend coming to theaters near you very soon. Rob, thank you again for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys very much. And Janie, obviously, you know, with all the kudos to you with helping with Roberto's Friend, because we wouldn't be in the position we would be in right now without Janie. So big kudos there. And Tony, wonderful as always. And looking forward to seeing what you're doing with Cranky Pants.
Yes, as long as he doesn't have any, we're all good.
It's gonna be out real soon. Don't you worry.
Yeah, so we want to see that one sooner rather than later.
Yes, well, you know that editing thing takes more time than you realize.
So, Tony, why don't you play Cranky Pants for today's song dedicated?
Yeah, you know
to
what?
Rob.
What I'm going to do, Rob, in dedication to you and to the time you took to help us shoot the video, I'm going to play that song right now. So, hey, everyone, this is Cranky Pants by Saint Tone, the video directed by Robert Mann.
What's up with your cranky pants? 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 Better change a seat if you wanna hang with me. I said, what's up with your cranky pants? Got a big black cloud hanging over your head. But if it's not asleep, you better go back to bed. Shift your attitude, cause you're acting rude. Your funky bad mood needs to change real soon. Cause all you ever do is bitch and moan to me with your best new friend and misery. It's time to shut her up, lock her up, and throw away the key. Woo! What's up with your cranky pants? 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 Better change seat, do you wanna hang with me? I said, what's up with your cranky pants?
been down, mood swinging around. I'm known to bring sounds to shake the rubble the ground. You know what I found playing this game called life? You have to separate real from the fake, struck through the strife. You heard it all before. Please don't kill my vibe. You have to admit you're walking, the party dies. You have to admit you're walking, the party dies. You have to admit you're walking, the party dies. I'm a simple and wise guy with passion in my eyes. I'm here to lift spirits till we all reach the sky. I can't recognize why you look so mad. So what, we all have haters, be grateful, be glad.
Call the doctor, she gets a man, cause your funk is killing me. You don't wanna be around when you're down. Infection spreads like a disease. What's up with your cranky
pants? What's up with your cranky pants? What's up with your cranky pants? Homie, start tripping, clucking like a chicken. Whining, sad about everything that's missing. Step up your position, vibes you're killing. Hating's forbidden, you should learn from the children. There's a spark that's missing. Let me light it up, let me turn your ignition. Yow! Start it up, vision when you're 80. Feeling like a schmuck, reflecting. Ready to self-destruct, waste it all your life. Complain about what, now alone? With the fiber in your cup, pushed everyone away. Scared every day, midnight black hair that you turned all gray. DK, and your fears and your hate, no way. Paint a life like Monet.
Better chains and jeans. CP, you better change them jeans. CP, you better change them jeans. If you wanna hang with me, you can't be so cranky. CP, you better change them jeans. CP, you better change them jeans. CP, you better change them jeans. If you wanna hang with me, you can't be so cranky. Crank it, crank it, crank it, crank it, crank it. What's up with your cranky pants?
What's up
with your cranky pants?
And that is the new song called Cranky Pants by Saint Tone. Once again, Robert Mann helped us direct and shoot that video. It's something that I'm putting together and will be available on YouTube real soon. When we were off the air, Rob reminded me to tell you guys to check out thepumpkincarver.com, and that's Carver with a K, and also the Pumpkin Carver Facebook. So if you want to learn more about it, obviously the first movie was out since 2007 and has received rave reviews, and it's available for purchase and for viewing right now, and he's working on the sequel, so definitely check it out. So we're going to take a very short break to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Gilman Amps, we create the tone in your head. Custom-built guitar and bass tube amplifiers.
Hey everybody, this is David Gilman from Gilman Amps. If you need any repairs, modifications, or restorations of your vintage or modern tube equipment, as well as custom builds, I'd love to hear from you.
For more information, check out their website, GilmanAmps.com, and Facebook, /GilmanAmps. We create the tone in your head. Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician Saint Tone. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sainttone.com.
We can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes.
We choose to end.
For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com.
Hey, so I also wanted to say, now that we are back for a moment, it is fall season and it's a great time to do fundraising, whether you're doing pumpkin or festival type pies and bake sales and things of that nature. Or don't forget, you can go support your Rotary Club, We had Mr. Greg Gill on the show a couple weeks ago, and the Rotary Club is selling pumpkins. So there's a lot of ways that you can do a charity type thing over this holiday. Try to be conscious of who you're helping and how to help people, and know that it doesn't take a whole lot to really change people's lives. It just takes you to take the first step. If you're looking for things to support, don't forget to check out our past guests. Every guest we've had on the show has some kind of a great cause that they're working with. And we really encourage you to share your great cause with us. So come on to Humanitarian Radio Facebook and like us, because we like you. Don't forget to keep your eye on SaintTone.com to see where we are, where we're going, what's coming up next. Hope you have an awesome week. Do something really great for somebody else, and you'll feel fabulous too.
So before we end the show, I'm going to play one more song. This is another brand new song for me. It's a song called Why Live a Lie? And it's basically a track about people that are out there not living to their fullest potential. It's as simple as that. Why Live a Lie by Saint Tone. Check it out.
But not knowing, falling and talking and blaming and waiting and screaming as another day turns to black. Feeling like you've met your match, but turn yourself around from lost to found. A brand new view is breaking ground. Every little dream, everything you need or wish to be is scrutinized beyond beliefs, but bravery is what you truly need. So break the grip, break the grip, break the grip of society, killing dreams through history.
You don't
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.